Well, good evening. Oh, come on. There's more people here than just three people. Good evening.
Good evening.
It's a pleasure to be here this evening. If you don't know who we are yet, John and Nayla Yell, my wife Nayla right here. And you know who the Bennetts are, right?
Yes.
Jeremy and Jonea. We are Jonea's parents. So I can tell you all kinds of things about her when she was a kid. Not Jeremy, though, but... But Janaea, yes, and it's such a, we are blessed in having at least one of our children coming back to the field to work with us. And I was always wanting it, I was always hoping it, and God gave me the desire of my heart and her, and my wife's heart too. And I was pleased in the first place that they were called, that she was called to missions, and it was more ecstatic still when they felt the call of God. And thank you, Pastor, for letting them come on down for those 2 months.
Yes.
Okay. My wife and I, we've been on the mission field since 1992. We started off in Manaus. My wife is daughter to Joe and Elaine Hawkins. Joe Hawkins passed away back in 2011. And this next week... Next week, we're heading up to Kansas. We're going to go see her mama, who's going to turn 94 later on this month. So we're going to be having a birthday party, probably about three or four birthday parties. As family comes in, we're going to have a birthday party. Then they'll take off, and another part, people will come and have more birthday party. So it's just not missions conferences that make us missionaries fat. It's these parties that we go to also apart. So as we come home and visit with family, we've been back stateside only a month now, a month and a week. And the Lord has really blessed. It's been a whirlwind. I said to my wife when we were sitting there at dinner, I said, can you believe it? It's only been a week, and I was at my dad's house up in Seattle area. So I was just like, wow, it's a whirlwind. But not to lose any more time right now, we'll go ahead and show the video, and then I'll talk a little bit about it, and then we'll have question and answer time.
Missions in Brazil. It's not about the beauty of God's creation. It's not about culture. It's about preaching Christ to all people.
Hello, everyone. We are John and Nayla Yell. We are church planting missionaries in the southernmost state of Brazil, Rio Grande do Sul. The city we minister in is Caxias do Sul, which has a population of over 550,000 souls. With us in the ministry are our son-in-law and daughter, Jeremy and Jonea Bennett, who arrived to work with us in January of 2023. It is such a blessing and privilege for us to have this opportunity to share with you what the Lord is doing to build His church through the ministry that He has given us.
The church we currently are working on has been named Victory Baptist. All of the services are streamed online, which is a blessing to those who are ill or that live in other cities and can't always make it to congregate. The church has around 75 individuals participating in services at least monthly. From January 2020 through July 2024, we have seen 27 professions of faith and have baptized 34.
Como cristãos, somos líderes neste mundo mostrando às pessoas quem Jesus é com nossas vidas.
In our absence, Brother Jeremy Bennett is the head pastor. He, with Jonir and Hobson, are doing all the preaching and teaching for the youth and adults in the weekly services. Janaea is in lead with the ladies and children's ministries. Three adult ladies that are partnering with Jonea in ministry are Sabrina, Vilma, and Michele.
Michele, our events coordinator, along with her daughter Sabrina, plan and help with the monthly ladies meeting craft or recipe that is made during the get-together. I was able to train Sabrina in child evangelism just a couple years ago, and she is now one of our principal children's Sunday school teachers.
Once a month, the men get together for Bible study and fellowship. It is an opportunity for us to help them understand their role as a child of God and leader in the home, church, and society. The youth group is now averaging about 17 that participate in the bi-weekly get-together. The majority of those participating come from broken homes. We do our best to love on them and teach them how important and relevant an active relationship with Christ is.
One of my ministries is in the area of music. Two of my students, Eduardo and Bianca, now play in our song services.
Apart from scheduled church services, we are actively discipling and training the people for ministry. Discipleship is key in strengthening and edifying the church. At this time, the Bennetts are teaching a discipleship course to married couple Hobson and Sabrina, two of our principal workers in the church. Our hearts are overjoyed that Hobson has recently expressed to us that he's been called of the Lord for the pastorship.
I am actively discipling and training Vilma. Thanks to technology, I'm able to continue online while we are stateside.
Besides canvassing and distributing gospel tracts, as part of our evangelistic outreach, Nayla and I have been giving conversational English classes. Praise God that several of our English students have given their life over to Christ. Now that Brother Bennett is more proficient in the Portuguese language, we are planning to soon start a more structured program, a Bible Institute, to be able to train the leadership that God is giving us. Another big plan we have is camp and retreat ministries. God has given us 5 acres of land to work with, which we are currently developing to accommodate up to 80 campers or more. The fences, septic, and control of water drainage has already been done. We are now working on building new stables for the horses that the Lord has provided us with. The old stables are in the spot where we plan on building some of the camp facilities. So far, we only are holding a once-a-year overnight youth retreat, as well as some other church activities on the property. Our plans are to have the facilities to be able to host more retreats and camps for the youth, families, married couples, and seniors. We are hoping and waiting on the Lord to provide the funds that we need to complete the project.
As you can see, God is doing great things in southern Brazil, but there is still much work to be done. Would you please pray with us that the Lord would call, raise up, and send more laborers to Rio Grande do Sul? Would you also pray with us that we soon would have the funds and laborers that we need to go forward with our Bible seminary and camp ministry plans?
John and I thank you so much for your prayers and support to our ministry in Caxias. May God bless you as you do your part in the cause of worldwide missions.
In Scripture, we read in Ephesians 6:12, "We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places." That's something I wasn't able to show in 6 minutes on our video. I would have had to go about a half an hour probably to show everything. But we face oppositions, and the opposition we face physically has the spiritual side behind it that's driving that. And our state is the least evangelized in all the states. And this, the state of Rio Grande do Sul, the size of it is about the same size as the state of Colorado. So if you know how big Colorado is, that's how big our state is. We have few missionaries that are there. Most of them are in the Metroplex in the Porto Alegre area. We are the only ones that are in the Sierras, the Serra Gaúcha. And we are in the second largest city of the state. When we first got down there, Caxias do Sul had somewhere around 240,000 people. And if you heard on, if you remember what I said on the video, we're over 550,000 now. And that's been in 27 years, more than doubled in size. And we have migration from other parts of the country and other countries that have come in. We have Venezuelans that have come and participated in our church services. In fact, the weekend after we left, another Venezuelan couple showed up at the church And Jeremy and Janae have been, Brother Jeremy and Janae have been showing, have been telling us that they have made our church their church. So, but you know, their Portuguese is a little bit broken. And you, those of you that speak Spanish, you understood Jeremy in his preaching, understood enough to know what he was saying. And so it's coming along. But there are other families that are there. We've had other families coming to church that have come and gone. There are Uruguayans that have immigrated into Brazil. We have Cubans that have immigrated into Brazil. We also have Haitians and Senegalese that have come into Brazil. Now, the Venezuelans, the Cubans, they speak Spanish. And so we are praying that God would raise up somebody or bring somebody down to work with us that can speak the Spanish. And God will help them learn the Portuguese at the same time. And we're also praying that somebody would be raised up and come down to work with us, or even there where we're at, somebody that speaks French that could be there to help. Because the Senegalese, not all of them, I was studying it out, not all of them speak French, but French is one of the languages they speak there because I guess it was a French colony at one time. And the Haitians, of course, they also have a French dialect. And so it's one way to help reach these people. And the state itself, as far as evangelicals go, the state itself, out of 11 cities in Brazil that have the least number of Christian evangelical churches. Now, when they make these statistics, evangelical churches will include not only the Baptists, but the Protestants and the Pentecostals. And so you got a big variety there. But of the 11 cities in all of Brazil that have the least number of Christian evangelical type churches, 9 of those cities are in our state. The state, Rio Grande do Sul, has the largest number of followers of Afro-Brazilian religions in the whole nation. That's a voodoo type. It's even higher than in the state of Bahia, where the slaves from Africa came in and were dispersed throughout South America. The largest municipal population of the Candomblé, which is voodoo, in all of Brazil, is in the state of Rio Grande do Sul. And so we've got a lot of demon worship, a lot of demonology that takes place. We also have another side of it, which is demonology in itself also. It's called spiritism, where people believe that they can talk to people who have passed on that are still wandering around their soul waiting to cross over. There's been several television shows and movies that have involved that type of stuff. That's spiritism. Our state has the highest communities, number of communities of spiritism in all of Brazil. And when it comes to evangelicals in Brazil, the state capital, Porto Alegre, if you count all the capitals of Brazil, and there are 26 states to Brazil, plus the federal district, which would be like the equivalent of Washington, D.C. Of all of those places, the capitals of those states, Porto Alegre is in 27th place for the number of evangelicals, which, like I said, includes all of the Protestants and Pentecostals in the middle. Our city of Caxias was founded in 1875 by Italians. And so we have a really strong Italian influence there, including in the spiritual realm. So there is a Catholic church in every single suburb. And the Catholic churches are full on Sundays. And every single year they have pilgrimages to Lady of Caravaggio. And people will go on foot and... A couple years ago, I don't know how many it was this last year, but a couple years ago I remember seeing there was over 350,000 pilgrims that made the pilgrimage over a 7-day period to there on foot. So that includes little cities around there also, but most of them come from Caxias. What I find is really interesting is they walk all that way, they make promises, and then they catch the bus back home. So anyway, but that's what we face down there. And the people are friendly. It's just that when you go to touch on the subject of faith, they clam up. They'll just clam up. There was about 2 months ago. In fact, on the video where you see that those half tubes, concrete tubes, are being put in, when I went to buy those, I was there in the office making the purchase, and we Americans are a novelty that have chosen to go to Brazil to live there when all of them want to come here. And so they ask, it's the advantage that we have. They ask us, well, you chose to be here? I go, yes, we chose to be here. Why? Well, the door is wide open. And I tell them, the Lord has put it in my heart to be here. We love you guys. We're here for you. And they don't know how to answer that. And when I was there in the office, that kind of a conversation opened up. And the secretary made a very common statement, how that what really matters is that we believe in God and worship Him, even though we have our own way of doing it. And my answer, I point back to Jesus when He was talking to the Samaritan woman at the well. And in return, I responded that what we need to do is listen to what Jesus Christ said to the Samaritan woman, that the true worshipers shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth, and that truth is found only in the Scriptures. And she just changed the subject instantly. And there was three other people in the office that were there listening to at the same time. Didn't go very far with that, but I got a gospel track in their hands, and I encourage them to at least, if they don't come by to visit, at least see what we're like and watch us on YouTube at least one time. So how many watches, we don't know, but I can see that we have quite a few. On the Facebook page, we'll have at any given time like 40 to 45 people that during the week will have seen it. Now, some of them are in Porto Alegre, that they're friends of ours, or people that are actually from our church, one of the couples that was showing on there. Nicole was saved in May. Jonah was saved in June. They are our English students that we have. And it took 4 years. 4 years. And they made a profession of faith, and they are changed. And we know that because Jonah got a ring for Nicole and asked her to marry him, and they've already been living together for 8 years. So that was the biggest witness. The biggest witness on that. I don't even know where I was going with that story. I'm in bad shape. What? I guess I just go off the questions now. Okay. I'm starting to wander. but it's such a blessing to see the Lord working in the lives of these people. And so, and they, oh yeah, Jonah, I know how I got there. Jonah and Nicole live an hour and a half away from our city, and they come every other weekend to church. And when they're not there, I know they're watching online, because we spent the last night before we got on the plane, we went out to dinner with them, and they made a comment about one of my mistakes in Portuguese that just happened that week. And I go, okay, you guys were watching then. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So questions. We have a question. Okay, right here in the front. Yes, sir.
Tell us how Jeremy and Jonea are doing. We got a little bit of an update there in the video, but I think most of the folks here know Jeremy and Jonea spent a couple of years here interning. We are their sending church. They've been there for over a year now. So just give us an update on what they're doing, how they're doing. We'd love to hear about them.
Okay. I'm not going to say they were panicking when the time was getting closer and closer for us to leave, but they were feeling the pressure. And God's grace is good.
Amen.
And they're doing fantastic. Jeremy is teaching every Wednesday night. In fact, that was a clip from about a week and a half ago when I was making the video, putting it together. I pulled that off of YouTube. Every Wednesday night he's got that, and every other Sunday morning he's teaching Sunday school. And Hobson, our new preacher boy, he switches off with Jeremy every other. And so Jeremy, he does the youth meetings. And the next morning, because we do the youth meeting on Saturday night, the next morning is Sunday school, so that's when Hobson does it. So he has a little bit of a break. But he's doing fantastic. We watched over the last month before we left that he seemed to all of a sudden hit a new level with the Portuguese. And Janae is ecstatic that she's able to be there with her horse, those of you that know her. So I'm glad that she's there because he's already 30 and we don't know how much more time he has. I'm glad that it looks like she'll be there when he passes so I don't have to make a phone call. But she's it's more than just the horse. She loves the ministry she's got with the kids and everything. And she's the adults, the ladies have just taken to her. Of course, we have several in the church that knew her when she was a little girl. Okay, so that helped a lot. And they were excited to see them come. And when they got there, it was like family coming home. And that is something that not very many missionaries, new missionaries, have as an experience when they get on the field. And so they're doing well. Like I said, Nayla, Janaea is heading up the ladies' meeting, and she's got the kids, but she's got the help, and which is really good. And they got tomorrow. Let me see. Wait, today's Thursday. Saturday is Brazil's Independence Day, and they have a big activity on their side of the property. So their house was the one where all the youth were sitting in it. It was more light. Our house was a little bit more dark, where it was nighttime and they were doing activities on our house. So we're using our houses for the camp activities. That's why it's only one night, because we only have a couple bathrooms. And so all of us guys, we all camped out in Jeremy and Jonea's house, and all the girls camped out in our house in the living room. And so it's a matter of just moving things, and it works. But they're all asking, can we do this for two or three nights? We're like, that's a lot of work to put in your house. If you think about it, ladies, you know, I mean, we give our things to the Lord. But when you got other ministries also, you got to be ready for Sunday. It just takes a lot. It's easier just to be able to leave a separate area, shut the door, and take care of it Monday or Tuesday. Because we would do that overnighter on Friday to Saturday. But we might be able to do like maybe after church on Wednesday night, take them down to the camp and be there at that time. So that's what we're looking at for those plans. And as you see, it's hilly, so we can't have like a big huge soccer field. And personally, I think that when you have like a big soccer field amongst Brazilians, you are leaving people out, because there's certain that are just really good at it and they dominate, and others get all discouraged. So we're inventing games that they've never done before. This last retreat that we did, Brother Jeremy bought bows and arrows, and we had archery. And we discovered we've got three youth, one boy and two girls, that are really good. So especially when they weren't professional bows and arrows. So they were doing really good. But they're doing fantastic. Keep praying for them, because it's stressful. Pray for them when it comes to allergies. Both of them have allergy issues. Jeremy has them a little bit more. But just pray that God resolves all of that once they get accustomed to all of the pollens that are around there and the molds that are around there. And we've got pollens and molds around us being in the Sierras. Okay, any other questions? Yes, sir.
I know you had mentioned originally the $100,000 mark for the camp.
Yes.
Or even Jeremy and Jonah were saying that one of their big expenses was the fence. And that, so give us an idea as to where that money would be going. What are the plans to put all that together? What's the ultimate goal for the physical property there?
Okay, well, we've already had, when it comes to the fence, we had funds that were already given towards that part. So that was already taken care of. It's all fenced in, got the gates and everything. Everything you saw being done is already paid for. But we need to get a building. We're not sure exactly how to do it yet, because what we had planned when Jeremy and Janaea modified the house that Janaea was raised in, they basically doubled the size of it. The contractor, they had to dig out, and we put in the septic system already thinking about camp. So they're hooked into the septic system, but when it was dug out, it exposed the foundations of the building that we were going to use to build on top of, which is an old building. It used to be Part of them were a grain silo for cattle, and the other was a big corral. But it uses the rock wall, and it's really cool. But when the contractor was looking at it, he says, John, he says, we're going to be putting an awful lot of money into this just for me not to be able to guarantee that this is going to hold up to the weight. Because we were looking at it, and so we're like, okay. So we discussed what we're going to do about it, and we all came to a consensus. We don't like the idea, but we have to remove the building completely and rebuild. And Jonah goes, I got an idea. Why don't we move it over there? So, and over there is right next to the corral is right now, the old corral, but we're going to use the part of that area also for part of the structure. So we don't have blueprints yet. We have it in our head. Based on what they spent on their house, we know approximately today how much it would cost to do a structure which would have dormitories with bathrooms and a kitchen. We have that. We have an idea of that, and that's what that covers. And, you know, the Lord knows exactly what we need, and we're going to keep praying and just see what God brings in. And if he brings in more than that, then we're going to need more than that. We had a situation with the rains at the beginning of May where Porto Alegre and the outlying areas of there got extremely flooded. They were underwater for about a month down there. Well, we're up in the Sierras, and that's where the water started. And it was torrential rain for about 3 hours. And we have a stream that crosses our property. And the bridge, which was a dirt with just the culvert tubes underneath it, half of it got washed off. It was still passable, but one half was washed off. We almost lost our utility pole on there, so we would have lost our lights and everything. And the whole thing is compromised. And so the Lord has provided funds for us to build a new bridge. It's concrete. It's being done right now. We wouldn't have been able to get out if we did it back then. We were so close to coming home on furlough. And God brought in more money than what I was thinking, what we figured it would be. But I'm finding out that we're going to be scraping it with the way it's going. And so God's providing, and he knows exactly what we need. So I'm not concerned about it. It's just we've got to go for it and do what we're going to do and just trust that he's going to bring it. Okay. Yes,
hi,
ma'am.
I was wondering, two questions. How would you encourage someone to pray about the spiritual opposition that you mentioned? Like if you're training a new worker, for example, and maybe they're not that familiar with the like spiritism and voodoo and all that. How would you encourage them to pray along with you for protection in that area? And then also, you mentioned needing laborers for like Spanish and French. Do you guys do is there a certain protocol that you would train those people? Or are you looking for people already trained in those languages? Or how do you teach someone the languages?
Well, the ideal would be somebody coming that's already trained with Bible college and everything. That's what we're hoping, because we don't have time to be training that side. But if we can get the Bible Institute going, and they already know this language, then they would train through the Bible Institute if they're amongst the people. As far as praying for us when it comes to those things, you could just keep praying that we would have wisdom on how to respond, that we wouldn't let fears rise up to get us to not say what we ought to say or do what we need to do. And that our people also, but our people are pretty bold about it. They're so used to that type of stuff. When they know Christ, they see where it's all wrong and they say, oh, that stuff can't touch me. Now, there are Pentecostals that they do stuff that makes you be afraid of all this demonology stuff. But we, you know, in all the years I've been in Brazil, we've never had somebody walk into the church that's demon-possessed. Never. And people have made comments about that. And I said, well, why would they come in when the Holy Spirit's taking us, is guarding us there? So, and if they do come in, well, God will take care of that too. So, and it's not like God prepared me. Even before I married my wife, I had an experience when I was at Bible college. Can you believe it? I was at Bible college, and a demon-possessed person entered into our dormitory at midnight and knocked on my door of all doors. And it was during the summer months when it was summer break. And we didn't know what was going on until we were right in the middle of it. And God gave me an experience where I understood what it meant. I'd only been saved for about 2.5 years. And God gave me an experience where I understood what it means that God will give me the words, the Holy Spirit will guide. He gives us the courage and the strength. Because we didn't start shaking, my roommate and I, until after the whole ordeal passed and the guy was gone. No, I didn't cast out a demon. I told him to get out of the room is what I did. But I didn't know enough, but God guided me in the scriptures. So I look back at that, and I just hope that and pray that if something comes up, that God will help. God will do it again for me, and I believe he will. We don't go looking for it, though, like some types of religions, they seem to go looking for these things. I don't know why they do that. Anyway, any other? I think we got time for one more.
Yeah, maybe one or two quick.
Okay, one or two. Somebody from way over there? Nobody? Okay.
All right, guys, here. We've got children and teenagers here. Can you tell us a little bit about the young people that are there? Maybe their school schedule, culture, life, fun activities, things that they would do just in that area pertaining to children and teenagers?
Okay. The variety of the youth that have come through our youth group that are really hooked on soccer, they seem to disappear because they get into a soccer club and they're always busy on the weekends and they just don't have time for God. The youth, though, are bombarded at school. The public school system there is a big failure. They only have like 4 hours a day that they're studying. And there's no control in the classrooms. Those that want to learn get frustrated and they sit in the very front while other people in the back just ignore it. The way that their system is set up in a way, it kind of promotes laziness, even if you want to go off to college, because you finish up with high school. Let's say you slide by with a D average. That's fine. You can still go to college because then you have these entrance exams that you take and you do a crash course for 6 months and you memorize everything. They show you how to memorize it and how to do it and you get into college and you're there. And so anyway, some of these college students that are graduating, I question some of them. So as far as that goes. But we have there's a lot of pressure, a lot of peer pressures. We see a lot of heartbreaking situations. They are addicted to their cell phones. They also we've got situations where the youth are pathological liars, and we know it. And you can't just confront them unless you catch them. But we know what's going on. And for them, it just... And even when they're a born-again believer, they still have a problem when it comes to the lying. And there's discipline they don't have. The way that the government has it set up, they can't be forced to work. They're never forced to work. They want to work if they can to earn some money, but you can't really get a job until you're 14 or 15 to do something. And discipline. Oh, I know. I can give an example with the discipline situation. There was one time people are coming out. I have to say this really quick. We had a situation at church one time where two girls that were about 8 years old at the time. They were fighting and they were butting up to each other, you know, pushing each other around and everything. So Nayla said, "Sit here until Pastor can take you guys home," because I had a Volkswagen Bug bus at that time. And so she used the word, "Sit here, you're under punishment right now." Castigo, I was going to say. So you have to sit there. And so then it was time to go. And I got him in the Volkswagen van, took him home. I was going down this road, dropped one off, then I dropped the other one off. And I had to turn around at the end. When I was coming back, here's this mom standing in the road. Anyway, and she flags me over, and I said, "Yeah, what's up?" And she says, "Did you punish my daughter?" And I said, "No." She says, "You punished her. You made her sit in a chair in a corner." And I said, "We had her sit down because she was fighting." And she says, nobody puts my daughter in a punishment situation but me. And I said, okay. So I wrote up a form, and next time I went through, I handed them to all the kids, and I said, and this form said that you cannot come on the bus to church if you do not have a responsible adult with you. I had to do it. It's the only way I could do it, take care of that situation. But that's the problem. I can just imagine what the teachers have in school. So, okay, we need to finish. All right? Thank you. Don't forget, we have prayer cards over there.